and welcome to Marooned at MacBytes headquarters, a day 157. Missed your cue there, did you?
I did. I'm putting that story in.
Mike's got a classic one to start us off with. Do you know, Mike, it's not even COVID related, and yet it's ludicrous. So let me get into the chat so I can say howdy doody. Why is my chat not loading? Oh, there we go. CQ Deb. Hello, Paul. And hello, Jonathan. On a call? Is this work related? At this hour of the day? Oh, Jonathan. Naughty, naughty. Nobody should be able to do that to you. So, do we have Apple news? Oh, we do. They're now worth $2 trillion. Have we worked out how many zeros that is yet?
No.
Shall we get on to that?
Yeah, just give me a second.
How many? Well, what's billion?
How many zeros?
Is it eight?
A trillion.
I know it's not, is it? It's more than that.
It's 12.
Oh, quite a lot then.
A million million.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah, and the next one's a quadrillion.
I did not know that.
That'll be next week, Timmy. That's 15.
That's 15 zeros.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to make a spreadsheet a bit wider, aren't they? Just saying. Yeah. Ah, well, we'll see how that goes. But yes, Apple are worth more than they were last week. And that was without me buying a thing. Not from them, anyway. Although there was a shopping incident today, wasn't there?
Yes.
More on that on Friday. But you can probably tell from my tone, it didn't end well. Are you infected?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Why's she gone quiet now?
Who?
The dog has been playing her chicken like a drum for the last hour. And now she's gone totally quiet, bless her little cotton
socks. Because she knows we're on air.
It doesn't usually stop her, does it? That's usually a good time to come in and demand something. If that was Maya, he'd have it timed to the last second.
True.
With his pre-barking.
She's got some chicken here.
She has got chicken. She's off her food today. She's not really bothered today, which is probably the first time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's had about half a treat. She left her breakfast, but then had her dinner. Ooh, new home outside completed mostly. So exciting. I'm loving following this along, Paul. It's like all the fun with none of the heartache. But I know you and your good lady must be somewhat on the stressed side. It's a very stressful thing, I find. Right, out you go. Go to Slack and let me see it. Oh, that looks absolutely gorgeous. Oh, I love that. It's nice that it rises up a little bit from the road as well.
Yeah.
I like that. TARDIS looks good out the front. Is it staying? I love those little things. They remind me of the 80s thing. But they didn't bring one of those when they did our extension, did they?
No, they used the inside.
Yeah, they kept disappearing. Yes, rather than put that in.
You know what they could have done?
What?
Used a gazunder.
They could have used a gazunder if they'd have had anything to put it under. It's looking fabulous, Paul. Oh, it's so exciting. And I've now got my eye on that window that I know from the tour is where your office is going to be. So watching that being set up is going to be so exciting too. Although, you know me, still got my eye on those garage doors. Oh, that could be an amazing office. Who needs cars anyway? Hello, Kim. How are you doing? Just a little bit stressful. It is. It's the most stressful thing, isn't it, that you can do. Possibly apart from having a child. I don't know. No, I had no desire to go off down that route. The double window is the loft area. Yeah, I think... Is yours the other way round than the tour one? Or was that just me looking at it wrong? Oh, I got sidetracked downstairs with that room. That's off the main area, and I think it was on the right-hand side. That looked really nice. Quite like that one. Oh, yes. No, it's looking beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Do you know, it's so scary to think it's not that many weeks ago. You didn't even have the foundations in, and now it's actually built. And it looks absolutely huge as well. Oh, yes, gorgeous. Gorgeous. And nice weather. Although there's a little bit of a cloud, which you could possibly send my way. It's gone all humid again.
No, it's raining.
I know, but the rain's not affecting the humidity, is it? It was lovely for 3 days. And now, although it says rain every day this week, and it's raining now, and it's only supposed to be 20, which means it's 36 in here, it's still humid. I think that's what's wrong with Lola. The opposite of the model talk. That's what I thought, Paul. So I was kind of disoriented. But yeah, it looks lovely. Really lovely. That garage does look fabulous. I think we need new garage doors, Mike. I think the garage doors we've got are the originals. But we did need to make a structural change to them. The garage doors we originally had like two windows in. So that they, instead of going up like that one does, these things open like a gate. And there was a window on either door that was then... Is it two windows on either door? Is that long since I've been outside? I can't remember. I think it could be two on either side. I'll find a photo. But they were glass, obviously, being windows. They were little panels of glass with, like, segments of glass. I think there's eight panels on each door, so two fours. But there was a spate of kids wandering around, you know, as kids do. And they were throwing stuff at the windows and breaking them. So my dad decided, before they even got to us, that he would do some DIY, which never ended well, to be honest. As you well know, it never ended well with my dad when he started trying to do anything DIY related. But what he did was he replaced the little panels of glass with wood. So they look like they've got a frame on, but now there's no glass, which was much more secure, which made him happy. He was forever doing that, wasn't he? He did it to the back door as well. He was security obsessed, my father. Literally, he would screw the windows down. It used to drive Mum insane. He did. Oh, hello, Lola. She's got chicken out. He would screw the windows down. Now, that's fine. Yeah, they were wood at the time, before you start thinking he's drilling through the plastic. But, you know, if you wanted to open the windows in the summer, then fair enough, take the screw out. But he screwed the screws in that tight that as it went through the stay at the bottom, the thing that holds the window open, he would bend it. It was that bad. That went on until Mum had an accident and there was a kitchen fire. When the fire brigade arrived and they couldn't open the windows, they went absolutely mental. Luckily for my father, he wasn't here, or he'd have borne the brunt of that. We just said, oh, that's him that owns it, you know, and blamed him in his absence. But he was actually at a friend's that day, wasn't he? I rang him. Mum was in no state to ring him. And I rang him and I said, don't panic. He's starting off by saying, don't panic. But don't panic. But the fire brigade are here. There's been a fire. He got back fairly fast. Needed the kitchen rebuilding at that point. But other than that, we were all right, weren't we, in the end? We all got dragged off to hospital, apart from Dad, who obviously wasn't here when it happened. And we were fine. Didn't we go off to your flat for the night?
Probably.
I think we did, rather than breathe in the fumes. Because obviously,
yeah, I think we did.
We weren't allowed to open the windows, were we? Because they wouldn't open.
And then we found black soot in all the DVD drives.
Yeah, that was frightening. This was like a year later. I'd got a binder on the shelf and it had plastic wallets in it that had DVDs in them. So I took this off the shelf with all my backups from the year dot. And I took it off the shelf and I opened it. And all of the plastic, even though they'd been, you know, squozing together during all of this in the binder, when you pulled them apart, they all had soot between them. And I said to Mike, look at this from the fire. So it was a good job we decided that we weren't going to sleep here that night, or we'd have been breathing it in.
Anyway, talking about the fire brigade,
that
leads nicely into my story.
Oh, it does actually, doesn't it?
Yes. A police officer had to call on the fire service to release him from handcuffs after getting stuck in them during a demonstration. The Northamptonshire police officer was showing new recruits how to use hinged handcuffs when the incident happened. The training sergeant thanked Northamptonshire Fire and Rescue Service for cutting the cuffs off him. The force's chief constable joked he would rather have chewed my arm off than call the fire service. After the incident was shared on Twitter, colleagues of the released officer said the incident carried a cake fine and would probably result in a career-long nickname. The officer in question, the corps training sergeant for the force, was made to walk to the fire station to be cut free from the cuffs. Scott Rennick said the mishap wasn't a good start to the day, but he did not mind if his misfortune put a smile on a single face during these difficult times.
Well, put a smile on mine! I thought you were going to tell your other story about the fire service.
Which other story?
Well, I think it's comical where you see them filling up.
Oh, yeah. One of the guys who we know from church and from the Catenians is a fireman. And as you said to me yesterday, once upon a time, fire stations had their own supply of fuel.
Diesel tanks, yeah, they were in the car park.
I see him regularly in what I called his company vehicle. In other words, the fire engine, or they call them fire trucks, don't they, in the US?
A truck or a tender, I think.
I see them filling up regularly around the corner.
The funniest thing about it is, as you pointed out, obviously a fire engine's going to take a lot of fuel, because that fuel, I presume, is fueling it while they're doing the other stuff with it, you know, like the ladders and things. It needs a lot of fuel.
Plus, if they got called out on a shout 500 miles away, I know that's unlikely, but you never know.
Oh, it has happened. They got called out up to Bolton, didn't they? So that's a good 30 miles.
Then you might need a couple of tanks worth.
So what they do, this Tesco that they're filling up at is incredibly tiny, isn't it? To fill, you know, not in terms of the amount of fuel, but just to get a fire engine in there, it's a bit on the tricky side. But the comical thing is that there's two tanks on it, one on each side. And obviously it's too big, so it won't stretch. So they drive in and they fill up the first tank, and then they drive out and come back in and the other way around and fill up the other tank. Can you imagine the Tesco points they get for that, though? That'll be well impressive. Hello, Anthony, you've joined us, and Jonathan's back. Excellent. I'm looking forward to the pick of the garden, Paul. Yes, you do hear chicken. She's gone quiet again now.
She has.
Was there a lot of crime? Not really, Kim. You do hear of break-ins, because it's a fairly wealthy area. But this was just a gang of local kids just being destructive. They were breaking wing mirrors off cars and just stuff like that.
Yeah, they did mine.
Yeah, it wasn't, I wouldn't say crime, though. It was just kids being stupid. Yeah, I mean, I'd lock the parents up myself. I think if a child is under 16, the parents should know where it is and what it's up to. My mother always did, till I was about 48. Seriously, she did. If you choose to let kids of 12 out, and they are destructive, it's up to the parents. But that was what was happening, just a gang of kids.
Voicemail unknown.
Oh, that'll be Peter.
You know what that means,
yeah,
don't you?
Peter. I thought they'd be allowed to use pink diesel. Back in the day, Anthony, they would. They would. They would have had their own supply. There was two fire stations local to us. One was in Chalton, which is probably about 10 miles from us, maybe less. And there was an army barracks next door, and I think they all shared it. And when my father worked as a transport manager, he had about 16 vehicles that he was transport managing, and they had two huge tanks in the yard that the vehicles were in, and it was pink diesel, and they would fill them up. Although I made a point to Mike, in this day and age, if it's not nailed down, people will nick it. If you've got a tank full of diesel, you're asking for trouble, really, aren't you? So I'm sure they've got a very good deal going on with Tesco. And it's probably safer not having diesel at the fire station. It just seems to me, you know, when you are maintaining those vehicles, it seems a bit odd to have to nip out to Tesco's to fill them up. That does just seem chaotic, but men in uniform, oh yes.
Yes, reminds me of Kath.
Maybe we should. Maybe uniforms is a good theme. Fireman Sam and all that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you
no,
see.
No, Kathy, not Kath.
Oh, Kathy. Oh yes.
Yes.
There was a summer fair about 4 years ago, and this guy who works for the fire service
the one we've just talked about
with the petrol, the diesel.
Petrolhead.
he arranged for a fire engine to come to the summer fair so the kids could have rides and have photos taken, you know, in their hats, subject to the engine not being called out to a fire. Well, this friend of ours got rather hot under the collar at the thought of all the firemen. and actually had a photograph taken with them, like a giggling girl. This woman's in her mid-50s. And this photo is still on her wall.
Pride of place, isn't it, on a pinboard?
Absolutely, pride of place in the middle of the pinboard. But the caveat to that was afterwards she was sorry she bothered. Because in the middle of the night one day, she gets up and she...
I forgot about this.
Oh, I hadn't, because that was what was so funny with it. She gets out of bed and she's thinking it's too light for this time of night. And she looks out the window and the sun's rising. And she's thinking, what's the sun doing up at this time? And she goes over to the curtain, opens it up, and it wasn't the sun rising that was the nice orange glow. The garden shed was on fire. I have no idea how the garden shed was on fire, but the garden shed was on fire. So she looks at it and she realises, you know, it's too far gone for them to deal with it. So she has to ring the fire service. Bearing in mind, it's like 2:30 in the morning. She's not dressed. She's in her night clothes and... you call it? Mike, help me out. The housecoat. A housecoat.
I was going to say negligee.
Oh, she had nightclothes on, but she had this housecoat over the top, which is basically... Do you have housecoats in the States? Let me know. It's like a fluffy thing. Like a bathrobe. Like a bathrobe. Only we would say it's a housecoat. So she shoves that on and the fire service arrive. And three of the guys were the same ones that she'd had a photograph taken with. And she didn't know where to look. Oh, she's never lived that down. Ah, a robe. It's just that traditionally here it's been a housecoat. You can tell I don't have one. Or I would have known what it was called. When I used one, it was a bathrobe. It was a blue bathrobe. Dad bought it for him, but I took a liking to it and nicked it. And he never got it back again. But Mum had a housecoat, didn't she? Mm. In fact, I think she's got two. Yeah, so that's what she was poncing around in. And there was the fire service giggling away at her. Do you know there was a story about that, actually, that was very interesting? This garden shed was ablaze. I mean, you can imagine a little wooden shed with something inside that had set on fire. The whole thing is just going to go up, and it did. So when they'd actually damped it down, the roof had gone, the sides had gone. There was basically just burnt stuff on the floor. Apart from a walking stick of her father's, he died years before. And this walking stick was untouched. It was still just stood there in the corner of the shed, completely undamaged. And she was like, I don't know what to believe about that. And I thought, I do. You know, these things, they happen. It depends on your interpretation of them. But I thought that was lovely. You jump to curb and bust the oil pan and to call the fire department. Prior to them towing the car, they gave you a ride home. Oh, wow. Now that's cool. Do you remember that car I had? I'd bought this car to replace a car that I was thinking of having done up. But then it never got to the point of being done up. So I was riding around in this car. It was very inexpensive, shall we say. And it was built like a tank. It was very heavy. So I'm driving around in it and I said, I think that's the exhaust. It looks like I need a new exhaust. And there was a popping coming from the back of it. So I'm riding along and Mum's like, it would be on my shopping day. I've got shopping to do. I said, I will leave it till tomorrow. We will do the shopping. So we're driving around with this thing popping that loud, you know. But I thought, I'm still moving, it's not a problem. So I'd rung the garage and said, you know, I need an exhaust. And he said, are you sure you need an exhaust? So I said, well, it's popping, so I think I need an exhaust. He said, well, I won't order one until you bring it in, you know, might be able to patch up the old one. So I thought, fair enough. So we just finished shopping for the day, thankfully, and all of the shopping was on the back seat of the car. Again, thankfully, this was pre-Mayor. So... because if we put it in the boot, that would have been a calamity. But all the shopping on the back seat. So we're driving home. We get through the town centre where we live. And we are literally outside the town hall. So we're talking bang in the centre of this place. And I goes past, do you remember that pub, the station at Sale? It's housing now.
Yeah.
But back then, so I goes past the station and I goes past this pub and I turn down the road and all of a sudden there was this almighty crashing sound. It wasn't the exhaust popping. It was like the car disintegrating. So luckily I'd actually slowed down, and it was probably going around the corner that did it. But I turned into Hope Road, you know, where St. Joe's Church is. So I was going quite slowly, and there was this almighty bang. So I carried on for, you know, like 20 yards and stopped and looked in the rearview mirror. And I said, just stay there, to Mum. I just stopped the car, put the handbrake on, left the engine running, walked back to behind the car. The exhaust had fallen off. Actually fallen off. So cool as a cucumber. People are staring, obviously. People are staring at this exhaust in the road and me calmly walking up to it. So I walks up to it, has a look at it, picks it up, cool as a cucumber, opened the boot, threw it in, and then put the boot lid down and drove off.
That happened to me.
Well, I rang the guy, you know, the repairers.
Yeah.
And I said, we spoke about 2 hours ago about my exhaust. He said, yeah, you know, I've got the reference and everything for it. But as I say, I won't order it till I know that's what's wrong with it. I said, it's in the boot. He said, what? I said, the exhaust, it fell off. It's now in the boot. He went, I'll order a new one then.
I can tell you 2 exhaust stories. The first one, you were in the car. It's my car. You were in it with your mum and dad.
Oh, remember that.
And we were coming back from the Trafford Centre, and I'd only just had the exhaust repaired, and it fell off.
Luckily, that wasn't the garage we use now.
That was one thing.
That was bad, because when it fell off, they obviously hadn't put a bracket on it.
Yeah.
But it fell off, and it fell off in the middle. So if you can imagine an exhaust going from front to back of the car, and they didn't put a bracket in the middle, the pipe broke from the body of the exhaust and went onto the road. So when Mike tried to pull away, the car wouldn't move because the exhaust pipe was just eating into the road. That was a particularly bad one.
Yeah. The other one was when I worked in Liverpool. I got home one day and there was no exhaust. And obviously when you're driving at 70 mile an hour, you're not going to hear the exhaust fall off. And I'm like, OK, where's the exhaust? Somewhere between here and Liverpool, 40 miles away.
Thing is, if you are driving around with a dodgy exhaust, you need to keep the window open.
Yeah.
Because of the fumes. I mean, that's the whole point of having an exhaust. Haven't we had fun with cars? Do you see why we're not petrol heads? We really couldn't care less. I mean, that was brand new, that one. Oh, dear. Yes, we're best off avoiding cars. Poor Jonathan.
Johnny's gone.
I know, work won't leave him in peace. But at least he had a Mac Bites last night. Who heard the show? Let us know if you heard the show. Did he have any other ones like that? There was the time what was that? What was wrong with it that time? You know, the one when I got stuck and the RAC brought me home.
Alternator, wasn't it?
It could have been. But it actually just cut out. You know, I
think it was the alternator.
No, I'm sure they would have been
able
to
fix that. In the middle of the night?
Was it the middle of the night? We were on the way back from somewhere.
Yeah, we were on the way back from somewhere.
Well, if it was the alternator, that was weird because they took us to a garage and they couldn't fix it. So we ended up having to drag it back here. They couldn't fix it on the side of the road. They took us to a garage that was open 24 hours. The garage couldn't fix it. So we ended up on a low loader being driven back in the front of, like, the truck with 2 guys. And we stopped off at the services because, you remember, we were with the RAC. Royal Automobile Club, and they are like your get home service. And they put the car on, and we were in Oxfordshire, which is a good 200 miles away. And they said, it's a good job that you're with us and not the AA. And I said, why? And he said, the AA work by county. So I said, and? He said, so at the border, the county border, you have to drive off the low loader and then be put on a new low loader and drive across that county. He said it'd take you about 3 days to get home. So we pulled off at the service station, but we bought him a meal. So we all sat there and had a meal on the way home as well. Dad was beside himself when we got back. Beside himself. He didn't like his own company, did he? And he was on his own at that point. I know you did, Kim. The gazunder. Now you've learnt another British word. And if you remember, I said my gran and granddad had one. They did, because my granddad had a serious kidney complaint. So he was often caught short in the night, and that wouldn't have been a problem. Just, you know, go to the toilet. But the toilet, if you remember, was outside. So he'd have to have navigated his way downstairs in the pitch black. I think they had gas lighting when they first moved in. It would have been way too. So they just had, a convenience upstairs, as it were. Now you know. Oh, your father filled the diesel car with petrol. Oh, no. And hauled to Pitlochry. Do you know that is actually so easily done, isn't it?
I was just going to say, you hear lots of people.
Yeah. And do you know what confuses the life out of me now? The 17 different kinds of unleaded petrol you've got. There used to be 2-star and 4-star, didn't there? And then unleaded. There was unleaded and super unleaded and super, super, super XL unleaded. And I'm just like, have you just got some petrol? But that is far too easily done.
I just go for unleaded standard.
I don't know why they don't make it that, you know, a diesel tank and a petrol tank, like one square and one circular or something, and standardise the hoses.
The nozzles,
And that way that could not possibly happen. But, you know, that's because we're geniuses and they're not. Aberdeen, though. Whoa. That is northern. That's northern. How far's Pitlochry from there? Is that on the north side of Glasgow? Or am I totally lost? I've not been many places in Scotland. Apparently I did Glasgow as a child, but I have absolutely no recollection of it.
Did Glasgow to get mayor.
That was on the outskirts, though, wasn't it? It wasn't actually inside it. And I've done Edinburgh. Done Edinburgh twice. There's Pitlochry. I do love Scotland, though. Oh, wow. It looks like Pitlochry. Looks quite away from Aberdeen. Oh, it is, and it's very rural as well, isn't it? It's not quite as southern as I thought. It's near Perth, Mike. It's between Aberdeen and Perth.
Oh.
We could never go north, further north than Perth, because we had a map on the back seat. You know the ones we were talking about a few weeks ago? The very big maps. They're like sort of A3 size, and then they open. And the dog was being too quiet again. And when I looked, I picked this thing up and I said, Mike, the dog's been eating the map. And he said, which bit has he eaten? And I said, Perth. He said, it's all right, we weren't going there. But we could never go to Perth. Not with that map, we couldn't. There is a nice direct road, though, there, isn't there? The A9 from Perth up to Pitlochry. We should have gone to Perth, you know, when we went to Edinburgh, because we were on the north side of there. There was also the Lomond Hill Regional Park. I have done Loch Lomond, apparently, in the Trossachs. There was a MacBites episode about the Trossachs.
There was.
But that's on the other side, isn't it, north of Glasgow? How far south of Glasgow is Stonehouse? Mayor came from a little place called Stonehouse. I thought it was about 10 miles. But it's so tiny, I'm not even seeing it on the map. Let's put Stonehouse in. I'm not sure if it was one word or two. Glasgow. No, I'm not seeing it. It must be one word. Surely it wasn't there. That's nowhere near Glasgow. No, it was on that road up there, wasn't it? Through Kilmarnock? Good grief, I'm lost now. Oh no, hang on,
Carlisle. Miles.
Yes, it is. It's that one there. Oh, that's dinky. It says Alexander Hamilton Memorial Park. That's new. Yes, it was ever so tiny, wasn't it, Stonehouse? What was comical was we needed money. Because, we didn't know we needed money, did we? Because we weren't actually paying for him that day. So we had to nick off to a cash point to get some money out. So we put the card in the cash point and out pops this Scottish money and we're like, is that real money? We had no idea which was the £5 and which were the 10. We were there, I think that's a 20. That looks like a 5. Trying to sort out enough money for Mayor. He cost £450, didn't he?
Mm.
Best £450 we ever spent. Bless. 97 miles. Oh, Anthony, at least you broke down somewhere handy. Oh, that sounds like me. If you could live anywhere, you'd love to live in Scotland. Scotland's gorgeous. It really is beautiful. We loved our time there. I think we would possibly, this was before we got mayor, I think we would possibly have seriously looked to move there. But for the fact the internet connection was so absolutely appalling. We were staying. We didn't go as far as Dunfermline, did we, Mike? It was literally just over the bridge. There's the fourth bridge, and it goes over. Which bit of water is that? It's a bit of a big bit of water, that, isn't it? And funnily enough, it doesn't say. That bit, anyway. So it was to the west of Edinburgh, and then we went over the Queen's Ferry thing. But I don't think we went as far. We were probably only about five, maybe even less than that. Can you remember the place it was, Mike?
No.
It wasn't Inverkeithing, was it? I'm having a look. It went past, you actually drove past, the biggest Amazon depot that was there at the time. And considering it was only 2000, you know, Amazon was less than 3 years old, and this place was absolutely huge. So yeah, we loved it. We absolutely loved it. I reckon we'd have looked for houses. But the internet was bad enough here. And up there, you would have needed satellite internet. Maybe it's time to go back and have another look. But obviously, at the moment, I'm not going anywhere. So it doesn't really matter where I live at the moment, does it? It's all much of a muchness. But we loved it. People were lovely. Place was lovely. Weather was cool. Suited me down to the ground. But I honestly don't see it happening now. Can you imagine we moved to Edinburgh and took Lola with us? She'd be distraught at not seeing the first family as and when she chose. So no, we're probably not going to do that. But it is a beautiful place. I'd love to live there. If I had to live anywhere but here, I would live there. I think we're incredibly lucky where we are at the moment. That where we were when I was born was probably a little bit too close to Manchester for comfort. We probably live about 10 miles south of that now. But when we moved out to the country, that was hideous. I would never, ever want to live in the country. It's just, no. There's no facilities. You've got to think about, you know, the stuff that you don't need to think about unless there's a problem. Things like medical care, stuff like that. It was just, and if you didn't have a car, you just weren't getting anywhere. So if you, and even then, do you know, you had to drive 5 miles to fill your car. It was 5 miles to the nearest petrol station. You could have run out of petrol by the time you got there. No, it was far too rural. Edsel. Ooh, had names, is that a thing? All the houses had names, is that a thing? A lot of houses in Scotland do have names, Kim. I noticed that. They fall into two categories. There's the kind of houses that would have a name. And then there seems to be like very closely placed housing estates where they're numbered. And they're very different. They reminded me of Ireland. In Dublin, we went to visit family in Dublin, and we got out of the city centre. Now, the houses in the city centre had been there since the year dot. We were staying with an aunt of ours. In fact, I don't think she was officially an aunt, but you know me and genealogy. She was related somehow, probably a 15th cousin, but we called her an aunt. And she had moved in with her husband into this house when they got married. And I'm guessing at the time, either they were incredibly wealthy or they'd increased in value since. But this house, when we turned up to it, it was amazing. It was a totally residential area, but it was on three floors. It looked like a palace. It looked like something out of Upstairs, Downstairs. And at the back, they had a little shop. But this house was absolutely gorgeous. So a real... There's lots of streets in Dublin that look just like this, but they actually look... It was more impressive than Downing Street. It looked that grand. But as we drove out of Dublin to go visit these friends, it totally changed, and it actually looked like a different country. The kind of brickwork they seem to have in Spain, where instead of being a deep brown or a red brick, these things were like slabs of concrete. So they didn't even look... They didn't look like even like a UK house. And they were quite close together, and all of those had numbers. But these posh ones on this big posh road, they all had names. So it must be a thing. All right, let me put that in so I can see where that is. Must be near Aberdeen, I would have thought. Zoom out. It is, isn't it? Not too far from the coast. Between Aberdeen and Dundee. And that's nicely placed, isn't it? Because you're near the Cairngorms up there, and it's cold, and I like it cold. Do you know what, Mike? It'd be nice one day to go to John O'Groats, wouldn't it?
Would it?
Well, it'd be cold.
Oh, true.
Aren't you virtually in Iceland at that point?
Yeah.
Actually, there's the islands beyond that, isn't there? There's two sets of islands. Then the Faroe Islands, and then eventually Iceland. In my mind, I'd like to visit Iceland, but only in my mind. I've read a lot of crime fiction books based in Iceland. So I really fancied seeing it, but it's all volcanoes and snow, really, isn't it? So I doubt it would suit me. I'm just a home person. That's my thing. I'm just a home person. Do you know, you look at this, though, and all the countries that I've not visited. But the thing is, you can visit them virtually now. Do you want to hear something sad? This is me, sad. There was a series on BBC Four, I think, called The Bridge. And it was set in two countries, Denmark and Sweden. And the bridge in question was the Øresund Bridge. So I'm thinking to myself, is this bridge real, you know, in this series? So I looks it up. Yes, it is. More than that, it's on Google Maps. So I finds the bridge. And the point of this bridge being very special is it actually links Denmark and Sweden. And if it didn't, you would have a kind of round trip. In fact, could you get there at all? I don't think you could. Nope, because Copenhagen is kind of on an island of its own. But they're close enough, if you're with me. You know, you probably wave to each other. But without this bridge, you wouldn't be able to get from Denmark to Sweden or vice versa. So this programme, based on the bridge, I then started looking up the history of the bridge. And it was amazing that this was the longest bridge span over open water or something, forever and ever, amen. So I got all the details of how and when it was built. And then on the Google Maps, I actually just went on like a tourist thing across this bridge. I'm literally just clicking as if I'm driving. So I went one way from Sweden to Denmark and then I came back the other way. And I felt after that I didn't really need to visit it, but it was nice. Oh, that's brilliant, Anthony. I often do that if I'm reading. I'll go and have a look at the map where the books are set using Google Maps. I do that all the time. That, to me, is like one of the most amazing things about the internet. We talked about a series of books that I'd read, and they were set in St Andrews in Scotland, which is also between Aberdeen and Edinburgh. Not actually far, I don't think, from where you work in. Let's have a look, St Andrews. Where's it disappeared? There it is. No, not too far. Just south of Dundee. And there was lots of descriptions in this book about the town and the fact that, you know, they've been on the beach area, the coastal area. And then there was two high streets and there was like one higher than the other, but they ran parallel to each other. Well, that was me. I'm like, OK, I'm off to Google Maps to have a look. And I did, and I just loved it. And then when I went back to the book, you know, I really had in my mind what it looked like. Part of this book was based around the university. So these two high streets, one slightly higher than the other, but parallel to each other, were opposite the museum. And I got from the museum to the university. And I do think it gives you a whole different sense of place in a book. So I love doing that, Anthony. Absolutely love it. And I think it's really nice when they actually describe a town. There was one that I was reading. I think the guy's called Kerry. Is it Kerry Wilkinson? And he writes books about Manchester. So I start reading this book completely unaware that, I think it's Wilkinson, completely unaware it was based in Manchester. And I started reading it and he was talking about St John's Street and going up Deansgate. And I thought, good grief, is this set in Manchester? And it was. Jessica Daniels, I think it was. Good grief, is he up to 16 of those books? Let's have a look if I can find the first one. It was based all in the city centre. Doesn't say, just says series. Would be handy if it told you what number it was. Oh, there we go. 12 book series, 12 out of 12. Locked In, it was called. And I'm sure it was all based in Manchester. Unless I've got the wrong book. Let's have a look. Does it say? Don't think it does. But I've read about four or five of hers. His. So hopefully, it don't throw me by having a girl's name. But it is. It's a he. Oh, let me just check. I'm sure it's a he. No, it's a he. It's a he with long hair, but it's definitely a he. I think it's that one. But one was definitely based in Manchester and I absolutely loved it. And it did make such a difference that they're talking about places and you knew it. The thing was, I read a review then on Amazon that said, like, it was far too descriptive about places I you know, will never visit. And I thought, but that's the point. If you do know it, it was spot on accurate. And if you didn't, then he'd given you enough information that you should have been really able to visualise it, if you're with me. But I love that one. Another series that I enjoyed, that one. Now, I've actually got something new that I'm listening to, which is very unusual for me. Let me know if it's available in the States. It's two things that have recently been added to Audible. One is called Hijacked Histories, and the other is called The Rise of the Iron Men. And they're both like real world things. They're calling them a podcast series. So they're six episodes of about 30 to 40 minutes each. And the one that I'm in the middle of is Hijacked Histories. So it is like a little podcast. It's talking about specific things that happened in history. So there's one about ancient Rome, Nero and Caligula. But what they're doing is kind of debunking the modern view of what history was and actually giving it like the true story. So what they're saying is that that histories have been hijacked. What's that word they use now? Basically like reframing the truth. So they're giving you like the real history of these things. The next one is England, when it became a republic. Then there's the storming of the winter something. Can't even see the full title. No, I can't see the full titles. That's great on their app, isn't it? Can I turn it sideways? No. So the storming of the winter something, the lost cause, the spirit of the Blitz, and the warrior on a horse. So it's giving you like the true story, not the populist true story from films that you may have watched. I'm loving that. Like 38 minutes, I can listen to that in about 15 because I'm listening at 2.5 times. Do have to concentrate at that though. Oh, You'd Have Died the Other Day. I had a book on and it was at 2.5 times, and they then started throwing some words in French, and I thought, that's cheating. You know, I can listen at 2.5 times if it's in English, but not if you're going to throw in some French and some Swedish. No, then I'm going to have to slow down. Sounds like a law firm. Carol and Carol. Oh dear. I've got a friend who's called Anne, and her surname is Marie. So when people say, like, well, if you think about people saying Elaine Giles, it's like two words. But when they say Anne Marie, without a slightly longer gap, I would actually change that to Mari, you know. Mm. But yeah, she's Anne Marie. And people are like, the lady doing the minutes wrote it down and said, and her surname is. And we went, no. Marie is her surname. And then she's like, have I spelt it right? Probably not. It's two E's.
Or Giles.
Oh, yes. People say Giles, and that does annoy me.
I'm listening to this book about football management, and it's being read by the fact the guy's American, actually, is irrelevant to the narrator. It's more the fact that he doesn't know anything about football. You know, and that, you know, that's fair enough, because they just employ him to read a book, don't they?
Yep.
But because I do know about football, and he's talking about names and clubs, he keeps saying Celtic instead of Celtic. And he was talking about Wycombe Wanderers instead of Wickham Wanderers.
Oh dear.
And today he was talking about Johnny Giles.
How can you not know it's Giles? I know that a lot of people say it should be a J. That, you know, if you think about it, a hard G, like gate, it would be Giles.
Mm.
I appreciate that. But Giles is also a men's surname, first name.
Jeez.
And there's things like Buffy. Wasn't there a Giles in Buffy? So a lot of people can understand it from that. I did have that French teacher who just could not say it. He knew it was Giles, but he just couldn't say it. You know, his accent made it sound wrong. So in the end, and I really did get very, very uppity if a teacher couldn't say my name properly, because we had girls called Ailsa that no one could say, and they made sure that they said her name right. Now, I admittedly, the difference was that was her first name. Plus the fact her mum was a teacher there, so they didn't want to rub her up the wrong way. So in the end, this teacher wrote it down phonetically, and he still struggled with it. When we came to our French oral exam, and as you know, I got a U, so that went really well. He had to say on the tape, which then went off for adjudication, the student's name. And he started and said, Elaine, and then he paused it and he said, Giles. I said, exactly. He didn't dare get it wrong on the exam. But the worst thing for me was when they started calling me Farmer. Farmer Giles. That didn't go down
only
well.
Only UK
either.
People will understand.
Farmer Giles, wasn't he in Peter Rabbit? Wasn't oh, no, that was Farmer McGregor, wasn't it?
I have no idea. I just thought it was an English expression.
There was a Farmer Giles, definitely. I remember that. But I didn't answer to it. What made that worse was, of course, that my father was a transport manager. But he was a transport manager at a fruit and veg company. So, and the address was Porch House Farm. So they called him Farmer Giles. Did not like that. Did not like that at all.
He's a character in a Tolkien novel.
Well, at least the upside of that is if people had read it or seen a film, then they should know it's Giles, yeah. As if it's a J, but it's not. You visited St Andrews. I would love to see St Andrews, Kim. I would. You couldn't miss it.
The Marine Corps.
That's another thing, wouldn't it?
Thailand.
I'm loving that one about the Marines.
Yeah, I just read that.
Do you know, when I was a student reading law, there was this case. I'm trying to remember what the principle of the case was. I think the principle that the case established was... I don't know what the principle of the case that this thing established. But basically, the story went that there was a policeman and he was... keeping guard, shall we say. And as I'm reading this case, I'm thinking, why would you be doing that? And I'd misread it. The policeman was in the middle of a bush keeping guard on a copse. And I read it as corpse. Which established a totally different principle. A copse being a small ward, which then I had to look up because I thought, well, if it's not corpse, what's a copse? To look it up. In my defence, I was 16 and naive. But honestly, that things like that stick in your head. Many, many years later, so about, if I was 16 then, I was probably about 24. It's about 8 years later. I got this law textbook. And again, it was going over the basic principles for, I think it was the History of English Law exam. And it had cartoons in it that were brilliant because the cartoons would like stick in your mind and then you'd understand the principle. And in this book, I turns over the page and it's talking about this case. And the cartoon was the policeman in a bush looking out with like a pair of binoculars. And next to him, there was a dead body on a table. And apparently a lot of people misread this corpse as corpse. Particularly foreigners. Now, we have a lot of foreign students reading English law. So there was a lot from the Caribbean and that who had no idea what a corpse was and thought it was a corpse. So at least I was in good company. Absolute classic. Thing is, though, I can still remember that, can't I? So it proved the point. You do remember.
So how did President Bush pronounce nuclear? Did he say nuclear?
It's new. Yeah, he always got it wrong, didn't he? And didn't he get the second word wrong as well?
Was it nuclear? I'm just thinking about a guy at work who was asked to do a video for Nucleus and kept pronouncing it nucleus.
Isn't nuclear, but there's also nuclear.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. Was it that? No, there was the other word he just could not say, proliferation. He would be talking about nuclear proliferation, and he couldn't say it. Repeatedly, he couldn't say it. You're thinking, but he's the president. Did they not write it out phonetically for him? And apparently not.
Nuclear.
Oh. Do you know, when you're reading off a teleprompter, it is a totally different business. When I have a video to do that is actually scripted, which, you know me, I go live. Mistakes and all. But when it's actually scripted, the number of mistakes you make is scary. Because what you write and how you would say it are two different things. So I actually had a whole day of segues to do, didn't I, for Brooklands. Started off writing them out in full, and in the end, I just put bullet points down and just made it up as I was going along. Because otherwise, I'd just fall over the words. The other thing that can go wrong is the pacing. That when you're speaking, you would naturally take a break at a certain point, but that isn't necessarily where you would put a comma. And it depends on your breathing and the cadence, you know, what who's the audience. So sometimes you would go faster, sometimes you would go slower, but you can't actually get all of that in with standard punctuation, I find. President Trump referred to Thailand as Thailand. I would say, how do these people get elected? But, you know, we still have no idea on that one. Tell you what does happen in the States that we find quite strange here. And I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's a weird thing to us, but probably completely normal to you guys. I know the Democratic Convention's going on at the moment. And I'd seen a speech from, well, I haven't seen it all, but I realised that she'd given it and there was a bit on the news. Michelle Obama had done a speech, and it wasn't the first time she'd addressed this same thing, you know, the Congress, whatever you want to call it. And then it said, is it Jill Biden? Dr. Jill Biden? Can't remember.
Joe Biden.
No, that's him. His wife.
Oh.
I think it could be Jill, but I'm not sure. Anyway, Dr. Biden will also be giving a speech. And I'm thinking, can you imagine at the Tory party conference if Boris's bimbo got up and decided she was going to do a talk?
Boris's bimbo.
Yes, Boris's bimbo. No, seriously. And then I'm wondering how that would work. You know, when we had Theresa May, is her husband going to get up and do a talk? That does not happen here. That does not happen here. There's no way. In fact, it's so old-fashioned, it drives me insane. When David Cameron came to power, before David Cameron, we had, there was John Major and John Major's wife. Now, John Major's wife was like the little lady at home. And then...
That's probably why he had an affair.
That's no excuse for having an affair. He had an affair because he's an idiot. Fancy cheating on a good woman like that. Absolutely insanity. Especially with who he had an affair with, Edwina Curry, another MP. Wonder she shut up speaking for long enough, to be honest. Then Tony Blair took over. Now, Tony Blair, his wife was a QC. So she carried on working, which was like, oh, good, we're getting into the state now where the spouse of the Prime Minister doesn't actually automatically need to give up their job then. And then it went to Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown's wife did work, I think she worked for the party, but then she had kids and she gave it up and she became a little housewife. Then it went from him. Who was after him? Cameron, wasn't it?
I think so.
Cameron's good lady wife. They had kids. I think they had three at the time. She started off as a buyer for a fashion company. But when they say fashion, not fashion, it was high-end leather goods. So it was things like Filofaxes and stuff. She ended up on the board. So she had a high-powered job. Walked into Downing Street, left her job. And I'm like, why? Because it's not like they then do go into doing speeches in support of the other half. She just had another baby. And I'm like, really? So she still had shares in this company, but just walked away from the job. I can't understand it. So yes, Boris's bimbo. Boris's bimbo did work for the Tory party. But I say bimbo, I mean, what's she doing now? So she's not married.
She's just had a kid, hasn't she?
Yeah, I know, but she's not married. And she's like living there with Boris and she's not working. I don't think that's exactly the best example, does it? Why can't she carry on with her job? Doesn't make sense. And anyway, she's with Boris at the moment, but with Boris's track record, doesn't mean she's going to be there tomorrow, does it? You remember Boris, he can't remember how many children he's got. He clearly needs a PA to count them all. Unbelievable. Usually it's a small speech introducing the nominee. The spouse speech. No, we I just don't see that working here, Kim. I think our press would absolutely crucify them. The press would be looking at, like, the shoes and the clothes and making comparisons between one good lady and another good lady, or the good gentleman, whoever. The press would tear them to shreds. Absolutely no exception. A while back when Theresa May was Prime Minister and they were talking about the Scottish independent vote, there was a meeting. The press were invited to this meeting to do like a photo op at the beginning. And it was Theresa May sat in a chair and opposite, just like you see at the White House with the two chairs either side of the fireplace, only these chairs were closer together, was Nicola Sturgeon. And the headlines on all of the papers the next day were Legs Have It. And they were focusing on the fact that they both had like a skirt on and who had the best legs. And you're like, did you do that with the guys? Because if you wanted to compare Michael Gove with Boris, go for your life. But it wouldn't sell papers, would it? The press are just weird here when it comes to tearing people to shreds. They love it. Hello, Simon. Late again, but we are actually still here, Simon. And I know Simon heard the show as well. Because we left the chat open and Simon was chatting away. You remembered that company's name yet, Simon? Or is it not Thursday at 4 a.m? When you will remember. Take a pad to bed with you and write it down. Then you can come back. I see the setup thing is still rolling on with more changes that they've made. Now they've changed the prices. I can't keep up with it myself. Mike's going to have to do a full BI examination of what would work out cheapest, don't you? Which you wouldn't have had to have done before. Life was simple before. Not only have they muddied the waters, but they've now made it complicated as well. You've not remembered. It'll come to you, Simon. It will. It will come to you. So no, this speech from the other half, no, that I can't see that ever happening. Mind you, at the moment, the papers have got their teeth into Gavin Williamson. Is it Williamson? Wilkinson? Williamson? Williamson, I think. He is the Education Secretary. Last week, the A-level results came out. Doubtless you've heard. They weren't good. So the children do, well, the kids, they're 17, aren't they? They do mock exams in the autumn, usually the end of October, early November. And these mock examinations are, they really are just mocks. They don't count for anything, apart from this year. The idea is if you don't do well in your mocks, it kind of gives you a kick up the backside to get some work done and improve for your final exams. But obviously this year, no final exams. So the teachers were put into a position of having to guesstimate what grades the children would get. Now, that's not actually difficult because the teachers do know these kids. And they would know right up until... So if somebody had done badly in their mocks and the teachers thought, yes, but they've really knuckled down since and the work's improving greatly, then they'll probably do better than they did in the mocks. So teachers put in their estimates of what grades the children would get. And like, for example, there was a girl who wanted to study medicine and she was down for 2 A stars and 2 A's. And when the results came through, she got a B, a D, an E and an unclassified. Like, how? How does that happen? Because her grades in her mocks were A's. So there's some kind of algorithm at play here. And apparently not very accurate. So the kids went on strike. And at the weekend, they had a big protest. Think you're rioters, Kim. They had a big protest. And by Tuesday, I think it was, these grades, history. They're reinstating the grades that the teachers put into this algorithm. Hello, Mrs. Simon. How are you doing? Oh, dear, your press are almost as bad then, Kim. They love the Democratic Party. They love Mrs. Obama. They talk Condi Rice and the Republican Secretary of State, a new one, for high boots. Why? We had a classic one here a few months ago, before the COVID thing. So obviously it's died a death since then. But you may remember, I do believe it was... Gosh, is it 6 years ago? No, it can't be 6 years ago. It must be 4 years ago. I think it was coming up to the Brexit vote. And one of the MPs had a lot to say, and she was pro-European. Can't remember her name now. Can't remember the name of the one who took over. What's the name of that girl that got shot?
Jo Cox.
That's right, Jo Cox. I hadn't actually heard of her. She was MP for somewhere in Yorkshire. Spen and something in Yorkshire. Batley and Spen?
Something like that.
I do believe it's Batley and Spen. And she was on her way to her constituency office this particular day. And it was the day, it must have been the European finals if it was 4 years ago. And the match was starting. And this little message came through that, you know, there was something going on in Batley and Spen with Joe Cox. But other than that, not much was said. Turns out she'd actually got shot. She died and her place was taken. This was coming up to the Brexit thing. Her place was taken. She was a Labour candidate and the Labour Party put up a lady called Tracy Brabin. And she was an actress. She was in EastEnders. Literally, like a couple of months before, she was in EastEnders. We're not talking like Glenda Jackson. We're talking she seemed to step out of EastEnders and become an MP. So she won the seat. So she's been an MP for 4 years. And this particular day, she's in the House of Commons and she's giving a talk over something or other. So she's making a statement. And she's got this top on and it's black. But it had a very wide neck on it and it was kind of off the shoulder. So it was very off the shoulder, if you will. She got absolutely crucified for that as well. But the thing was, he didn't even have to wait for the newspapers. It was before all that. It was people on Twitter. And the comments were absolutely scathing. And I thought, well, it's not exactly, you know, House of Commons wear, but it's up to her what she chooses to wear. I didn't think it was the wisest choice she'd ever made, but again, you know, it wasn't indecent, it was just off the shoulder. Well, some of these comments must actually have used the phrase that she then used. So she comes back on Twitter and basically says, you know, it's up to me what I wear, etc., etc. And the way you have described it, and then I think what she next says is quoting what somebody else had said. But they actually said... Or her tweet said, so you think I look like I've just been shagged over a wheelie bin? Unbelievable. So, of course, this is going on in Twitter in real time. Headlines the next day, you can pretty much imagine. What she decided to do to turn it around to her advantage was, turns out this dress had come from a particular shop, which in between... the first photos of her wearing it and the clothes of business had totally sold out. So some people liked it. She decided she would auction this dress off for some charity or other. I think it was in support of women. There's another MP, Jess, I think her name is. And she's a Labour MP and she's also been criticised. Every time she's on Twitter, she's criticised. And no one seems to be able to just... say, I don't agree with your principle. No, it always has to come down to the most base level of criticism. And then 9 times out of 10, and she has reported this to the police that many times, she must have them on speed dial. It always seems to end up with, and I'd like to rape you, or I will rape you, and I will rape your family. I mean, is that acceptable? I mean, I know it's Twitter, but really? I can't imagine that ever being acceptable. You know, I know they're keyboard warriors, but even so, you know when you press enter that you're sending that and it's a criminal offence. To even say it is a criminal offence. And they don't seem to have any brakes on themselves at all. I think the lady who handled it best was Mary Beard. I must admit, Kim, Twitter, I'm like, I'll just go in, I'll just post, I'll just go out. It's become really toxic. And I've banned that many words already. If I ban any more, I'm not going to see anything on Twitter. But have you heard of Mary Beard? She is fabulous. I love that lady. She's a classicist at Oxford. And she was doing some programmes for the BBC in her specialist area, obviously, of classics. And she's got a fantastic screen presence and she explains everything so well. You know, they're really enjoyable. They are absolutely lovely. She was on Twitter and a youngish guy, I can't, the language is that bad, I won't even repeat it. But he said she had a face like something that we do not want to mention. But it's got 4 letters and begins with C, if you can follow me. And she sort of said her piece back to him and said she'd tell his mother. He came back and apologised. He was terrified. And I just thought that's such a fabulous way of handling it. I think after that, subsequent to that, you know, and we're talking weeks, not days, She said, would you like to meet up? We can talk about it. And he had his attitude realigned. Now he's very pro Mary Beard, which I thought was fabulous. But she was saying that she gets so much criticism. She's got... do you see her programmes in the States? Are they available? She's got long grey hair and she says she can't be bothered wearing makeup. She, you know, why would she put makeup on for the TV other than, like, you know, to stop herself shining? Because she doesn't wear makeup like that normally. So why would she wear it because she's on the TV? And people really do seem, men more than women, but some women as well, to just not be able to cope with it. That she just looks the way she looks and she really doesn't care. They just cannot seem to handle it. One was a company, not a beautician's, a hairdresser's, who used her picture and said, you know, you don't want to look like this. And they offered her a free haircut. And again, she went back and she was the epitome of class. But, you know, to me, she's such a lovely lady and people always have to drag it down to, you know, oh, look at her hair, look at her teeth. She's not wearing the right makeup. I hate that. I really do hate that. I wonder how she actually copes with it, because it seems to be unrelenting. But the programmes are fantastic. You know, I don't think it matters. You don't know her. Right, there you go. There is a picture of the lady from the History Extra podcast. I just think she's got a lovely smile. I don't care what makeup she's wearing or not wearing or whatever. Is this one kind of about it? Yeah, there's a story from The Independent. Now, when did that post? How long ago was that? Come on, Independent, let me in. You're using an ad blocker. I know, and guess what? I'm going to carry on using an ad blocker. But if I want to see your post, I'll open it up in the one browser that I do not have an ad blocker in. But I don't like that you make me do that. Right, let's go and have a look at this story. I think it was women. Was it women were complaining? I'm not sure. Not sure, but a lot of people were having a pop at her. They're always having a pop at her for one thing or another. But honestly, she's fantastic at what she does. So I really don't see the point. If she wants to have hair like that, then that's up to her. She's obviously got more sense than to sit there at the hairdresser's for 3 weeks every month. She's a dame. I didn't realise that. Seems she's respected by the Queen. Good enough for you. Exactly. She's a lovely, lovely lady. Whenever she's interviewed, she's always laughing. She can laugh at herself. One of the things that happened in the last couple of months, and again, this was just so funny. In hindsight, wasn't funny at the time, I'm sure. She was going through Heathrow. So this was when we could travel. So it must have been over 6 months ago now, but not. It'd be less than a year ago. She's going through Heathrow and they pulled her aside for an extra check. And they asked her to take her jacket off. You've got to take your jacket off. But she was saying that this jacket was her top as far as she was concerned, because the only thing she had on underneath it was a vest. So she said, no, this is my top. It's not a coat. And they were said, no, it's a coat. You've got to take it off. So she said, well, I haven't got anything on underneath other than a vest. And he said, well, that's your lookout, isn't it? So they dragged this coat off her in the middle of the terminal in front of everybody else, and she stood there in basically her pants, and she still saw the funny side of it. She didn't complain. She did tell the papers, but when they said, like, you know, do you want to make an official complaint, she said, no, I'd just like them to be aware that, you know, that their definition of clothes, and just be more sensitive. Got no problem taking it off, but could we have gone into a side room rather than the middle of the terminal? That I can cope with it. I have a level of, you know, fame that the ones that don't like it, you know, are offset by the ones who do, that, it, you know, they're on my side. It's not a problem. But a lot of people, and she made the point of, like, what if you had been a domestic violence victim or something, and they're insisting that you basically strip off in the middle of a terminal? They're not being sensitive. And that she said she can cope with it. You know, if they want to look at her grubby pants, that's up to them. She said, I didn't have a bra on, so it's their own fault. She's fantastic. I'm telling you, she's brilliant. Love her. When I was in school many years ago, we had to pass the state constitution before going into high school, and then in high school, the US constitution before you could graduate. Oh, wow. Wow. Now, she does do a very, very good job. In fact, you know, it reminded me of when I had to have my coat inspected. We were at school and there were 30 students to a class, and There had been reports of people leaving school and they weren't wearing official clothing, which was either a purple, and I do mean purple, blazer, or a navy blue coat, one or the other. That was the only thing that you know, was your school uniform. Now, I did have a blazer, which was bright purple. I must dig that out. It was that bad. It really was bad.
It also was black.
No. Oh, I would have loved to have been in black. Oh, but this purple, it was just... And it was wool, and it stank when it got wet. So the thing was, you would be trying to keep in the winter, although the blazer may have been semi-warm, you would want to put a coat on over the blazer. And if you couldn't put a coat on, the other thing was, if it was raining, you had to keep this blazer dry, because if you didn't, you'd be sitting in it stinking all day. It smelt like... It was wool. So it smelt like wet sheep. And I'm not joking now, the smell would knock a donkey out. It was hideous. You couldn't wear it if it got wet, because the purple, it wasn't lined, because it was wool. So the purple would bleed into your white shirt. So you didn't have a uniform. Oh, Kim, I would have loved that. But this particular day, the headmistress had got completely off on one over the fact that there were far too many reports of students wearing non-uniform coats to go home. Well, the thing was, I had a non-uniform coat, and my non-uniform coat was exactly the kind of coat that she was on the warpath to ban. We would call it a parka. I don't know if...
I had a parka.
Was it navy blue and orange on the inside?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my parka. With a fur hood.
I'll Google it.
So the thing is, with these coats, they were lovely and warm. There was a million pockets. They would go over your blazer. It would keep you warm and it would keep the blazer dry. They were fabulous. They just weren't on the approved list. So she decided on a spot check. She sent us all into the cloakroom to acquire our coats and then bring them into the hall. So if you could imagine a line.
It was kind of like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the main problem with these coats was that the inside is bright orange. So if you didn't have it zipped up, if it was zipped up, it would be navy. But open, it's bright orange and it clashed with the purple. And it wasn't the aesthetic she was looking for. It was, however, warm enough. And I thought, do you know, I've a good mind just to ring Mum and let Mum align her re-expectations for her, you know. But never mind. So imagine like 12 classes queued up, 30 long in each queue, with a teacher at the head of the queue and a clipboard. And she was going to give you a tick for your coat or a dirty big cross. So there's 30 of us in this class and we're just looking at each other. And 28 out of the 30 were stood there with something non-uniform. And we just looked at each other and said, we are so screwed. We are so screwed. The two who had the official coats said, well, you know, maybe not. What if we go to the front of the queue first and then the person who gets the tick hands it to the third person in the queue and then takes the third person's in the queue coat back to the change, you know, back to the cloakroom? And we went, that'll work. So we put the two who had the official coats at the front and the teacher, this shows you the intellect level of the teacher, or she didn't think we were as devious as we were. She ticked off the same coats 15 times. So the first one in the queue gave it to the third and walked back with it, and then the second one gave it to the fourth and so forth. Oh, we got 100%, we were good. We didn't explain why on the way home 28 of us had a parka on, but we didn't talk about that, and then the head teacher never troubled us about it again. She must have realised we'd outwitted her somehow. Oh, fabulous. You didn't have a uniform either. Wow. You went into the sixth form, didn't need it. You didn't wear a uniform in the sixth form, did you?
Not in the sixth form, no.
No, I didn't when I went to college, obviously. It's usually between 5 and 16 here. But the thing about uniform is I didn't have a uniform. Well, the uniform wasn't compulsory at my primary school. But I said to Mum, I want the uniform, which was a black skirt. My first primary school was green and grey, and it was compulsory. But my second was a red tie and a black white shirt, black skirt. And I said to Mum, I want the uniform. And I said, but, you know, it doesn't have to be like the expensive uniform. Can we just buy the tie? And then any white blouse will do, and any black skirt will do. And I wanted to look like I was in uniform, because the kids could be very judgmental of your own clothes. Oh, that's so last year. So I just thought, you know, if I'm in a uniform, it's one less thing to worry about. And I went into like the cheap version of the uniform. My next school was green, I think. Green blazer, green tie, grey or black skirt, but I think grey was preferred, and a white blouse. But it was when I got to the grammar school, the second grammar school, that was like purple, wool, really? And I don't know if you've seen pictures of people like from the 1920s on a beach wearing a woolen bathing suit that goes down to the knees, but that's what this blouse, this blazer thing was like. It was hideous. I'm sure it's at the back of my wardrobe, because I remember saying, I am never parting with that. I never want to forget how hideous it was. So it could well be at the back of the wardrobe. Might dig that up. Oh, we did learn how to beat the system. Oh, absolutely. But you know, it shouldn't be like that. As long as you've got to think about what was the rationale for doing the check and stuff. Because some children couldn't afford the uniform. The blazer alone, with it being wool and stuff, I think it was about £120. And that, for my mum when I started, was about 2 weeks' money. Seriously. And I said, I'll do without one. And she said, you're not starting at this new school without a blazer. And I swear there were times she didn't eat just to make sure that I'd got enough money for stuff. They had things like school socks that were like £10 each. And I said to Mum, no, I'm sorry, I draw the line. No. A pair of socks, you could probably get about three for a pound. And they wanted nearly £10 for these. It was ludicrous. The amount of stuff they wanted. And then in the summer, you weren't supposed to wear a white blouse. You were supposed to wear purple and white stripes. You looked like a bar of mint rock gone mouldy. And again, they were hugely expensive. And I would just say, do you know what? Just get plain white shirts. Plain white shirts, you could at least, I think I had about 8 or 10. Enough for 2 weeks, basically, in case there was a problem with the washer. And I probably got those 10 shirts for about £6. But each individual shirt was nearly £18. And I just wouldn't let her pay it. I think it's ridiculous. So some kids couldn't afford it. And I think, what's the most important thing here? That a child is dry and warm on the way home, or that they're wearing your stupid purple stinking blazer? And in her mind, the stupid purple stinking blazer. But in everybody else's mind, just being safe. If I opened my coat with my orange inside on my bike, you'd certainly see me coming. That was my logic. Every year when the schools go back in September, there'll be news stories of kids being turned away because their shoes are wrong, the wrong shade of black or something daft. You're right. You're absolutely right. And they're not thinking, I mean, OK, if you're going in like stilettos that are 10 inches tall, but there are limits, aren't there? One that got me a couple of years ago, Anthony, really made me laugh, was some boys who weren't allowed to wear shorts. It wasn't on the uniform list. So there was a uniform list, and there was like the boys' uniform and the girls' uniform. And the girls had like trousers on it or a skirt. But the boys only had trousers. They didn't have shorts. So if it was really warm, and this particular time, you know, again, it was like one of these heat waves, these lads were saying, can't we just wear shorts? Not shorts like football shorts, shorts of the right colour, but shorts, not long trousers. And they do that in Australia, don't they? Mm. Even for students going up to like 18. No came back. If it's not on, and this was what they said, which was what kicked it off. If it's not on the uniform list, you can't wear it. And one of these lads wrote back and said, so I can wear anything that is on the uniform list. And they came back and said, yes. They did not specify the boys' uniform list. So the following day, five lads turned up in skirts that they borrowed from the girls. Because, hey, that was on the uniform list. Needless to say, within the week, they could wear shorts. I do admire those boys. They were all over the paper and the internet. But that's why they checked, you know, the uniform list rather than the boys' uniform list. Love that. In my day, it was just getting an education. It didn't matter. It didn't matter what you wore. I do see there is a place for uniforms, but not to the degree that somebody can't turn up with something that is acceptable. One thing that's changed now, I've not seen this in years, is people knitting their own school jumpers. My gran didn't. She could have done, but she didn't. Mum insisted I had the cardigan with buttons on the front, but I wanted a jumper. But, you know, children would turn up and they would have home knitted jumpers, which I don't think is a thing anymore. But so what? You know, if it was navy blue, which they were supposed to be, some put the purple stripe in, some didn't. It'll do. It's not like they're wearing lime green, is it? But some of them get very giddy. They are using uniforms as an opportunity to make money. You're quite right, Anthony. Some of the things I see now, it's criminal. Now, instead of it being a jumper, a blue jumper, it will be a school sweatshirt that is only available from the single school supplier. So you have no choice other than to buy that item from one supplier. And obviously, they're going to charge whatever they want. Another thing they do for money is they will, and I mean, obviously, it's not compulsory. Mind you, not the jumpers isn't, the sweatshirt's not compulsory, is it? Unless you want to freeze to death, which makes it compulsory. And these sweatshirts, you know, they're like upwards of £20. It is a total stitch-up. You're right, Simon. But the other thing they do that the children want, so they're not the odd one out, is bags, school bags. And that became a thing. And I thought, they're all carrying the same school bags. When did that become a thing? But then you realise, oh, that is a thing. Fair enough. But then you realise there's not just one school bag. Oh, no, that went down really well. So let's make two more. So one is a general book bag. No, one's a general school bag, one is a book bag, and one is the PE kit bag. So now, instead of them carrying one bag, they're carrying three. Have you also noticed, Mike, when you see children come out of school, they throw their bags at their parents, and then the parents carry them home. In my day, I had to carry my own. I don't know when that became a thing either. Talk about spoiled. But yes, the parents are having to stump up then for PE kit. You know, gone are the days you get, again, you could just wear a standard pair of shorts. The sweatshirts, of which, you know, you're going to need more than one. How can you put it in the wash? Then multiple bags. It is utterly ridiculous. Oh, Simon, I'm loving that. Can I nominate you, Simon, for Secretary of State for Education? Rule the teachers can only buy from Armani or Vivienne Westwood. See how they like it. Indeed. With all those bags, I'd need one with wheels. We actually have at the church, usually September time, a bag blessing. And all the little kids come in with the bags and they go up on the altar and then Ned asks them a few questions and stuff. It's hysterical. It is totally hysterical to watch them. And he's so good with them, isn't he, with the kids?
He is.
But again, they only take one bag. I know in my day there was... We had cookery, so you had to have your cookery bag, and then you had your hockey kit, then your standard PE kit. If it was the summer, you had your tennis racket, then you had your art folder, and that was on top of all your books. But, you know, you could put them in what you wanted, but these bags at £20 each, it's ludicrous. You can't do anything official. Oh, dear. Oh, yeah, that's actually a point if you had to do it for a living. Yeah, but being the official government heckler would work. I think that would definitely work. Now, the teachers need a reality check because they're trying to, they potentially may get a kickback from these companies. There would be incentives involved, shall we say, to use their services particularly. But then to me, that's a monopoly. And although it did happen years ago, you could just wear a normal blue jumper if you, you know, you would get away with that. You would get away with it. But now, no. Unless you want to sit and sew your own. But what they do with that is they make the colour of the sweatshirt something you can't buy. So the sweatshirt won't be black or a particular shade of blue or red. It'll be some kind of weird colour that you can only buy from that supplier, which is criminal. Schools get a budget and obviously it pays them to have that budget supplemented in any way they can. But it's not fair on the parents then. Ah, but there we go. Now, I think I missed something earlier in the chat. It scrolled past. Ooh, Mrs. Simon. Youngest gets GCSE results tomorrow. Topic of exams is rather a hot topic. All the very, very, very best. I hope gets exactly what they need. Surely, you know, I don't know why they don't just give everybody exactly what the teachers said and let everybody, you know, like if you've got a place at college or something, just give everybody the place that they're after and call it done. It's the easiest way. It's not the children's fault, is it? I know they've got to give them something, but, you know, in years to come, wouldn't it be weird that you didn't actually sit the exam for those results? I just think it would be really weird. But fingers crossed for tomorrow. Wishing them every success. Surely the government have had 6 days to make sure that tomorrow doesn't turn into a repeat of last Thursday.
That was chicken.
That was chicken. Chicken needs to go out, Daddy.
Chicken needs to go out.
So with chicken going out, we'll go out as well. We will say goodnight to you. Ooh, let me catch up here. I'd make it with a white top, black pants and call it a day. Me too, Kim. And I think ties are well out of date as well. And blazers. But there's kind of a cachet about having a blazer and a tie. So, but if it was black, you know, it would be fine. When you graduated, you could either rent from a hideously expensive university supplier or the school union. Same with the photos. School union did them at the sensible price. Do you know when I graduated, Anthony, the outfit was so expensive. Mortarboard gown and a convocation hood. It was so expensive to rent it. It was about £95. So my mum rang Eden Ravenscroft, which was a barrister's outfitters in London, and asked them if they supplied London LLB garb. And they said they did. And she asked how much it was. And it was actually only £145 to buy it. So she said, yeah, I'm not having you graduating in secondhand stuff from somewhere else. She bought it. And she said, actually, I think that's quite cheap. Because for the 95, you got the hood and the gown. You had to pay extra for the convocation thing anyway. So mortarboard and gown included. And she said, plus the fats, I don't want you to think you might get nits. That was my mother. My graduation outfit still hangs in the wardrobe. If ever I have fancy dress, people are like, that's really well made. Yes, so it should be. You didn't even bother with being hooded. No shame in that. I must get my graduation picture out, mustn't I? Considering it, you know, the photos cost a fortune, getting there cost a fortune, and Mum bought me the outfit. Absolutely. I will dig it out and find it. You bought a hat and rented the cloak. I would have done if it had been cheaper, but it was so expensive. And, you know, I had heard horrible tales from the year before of people turning up and they were ripped or didn't fit properly. You ordered them by height, I think. So obviously I'd been fitted for mine and it was all perfect. So Mum was very happy. There's a photograph of me on my own and then there's a photograph of me with Mum and Dad. So I'll have to dig them out. Chicken's back now as well. But for the moment, it is good night from me.
It's good night from me.
Good night from Lola. And we'll all see you next time. Stay safe, guys.